I know the kind of pain you're feeling, Alex. I once had it myself.
You some kind of doctor?
No, Alex. I am Magneto, and I have come to offer you sanctuary.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Grounded Futures Podcast. This is the show where we discuss topics that are important to our collective survival and thrival. We also dig into ways youth, and anyone really, can gain new skills to thrive amid current and ongoing disasters. This season's meta theme is all about trust. Trust in ourselves, trust in our work and art, and trust in each other. We are your hosts, William and Carla.
Welcome to our show. We produce Grounded Futures on Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, but our guests are from around the world. A big thank you to Zach Bergman for our show music, and a big thank you to Robin Carrico for our show art.
And before we start today's show, here is a short jingle from one of our pals over at Channel Zero Network.
I'm going to make those pompous academics regret kicking out such a genius. Deciding to build my lab and do my research.
The Time Talks Podcast.
Have you ever stared at a 500-page book and wish you could just talk to the author about their ideas instead? If so, the Time Talks Podcast, part of the Channel Zero Network, is for you, where we discuss history, politics, music, and art with an anti-authoritarian and anarchist perspective.
The Time Talks Podcast.
What's this light? I feel different.
The Time Talks Podcast.
For today's show, we are joined by Shanga Tagore. Shanga is a queer, prismatic, non-binary theater artist, writer, speaker, cat mama, and Buffy enthusiast. And they weren't kidding when they called her, well, a witch. Her witchy powers and ancestral roles include, but are not limited to, quantum communicator, creatrix, death doula, timekeeper, and grief worker. Shanga is the founder of Otherworldly Giants, a creation company and storytelling school where we create and study stories that serve as altars for building a new world paradigm. Shanga spent the last decade working as an astrologer, cosmic coach, artist, and producer, primarily in queer, racialized, survivor, and disability justice-oriented communities. Welcome to our show, Shanga.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, such a delight. Welcome to the Grounded Futures portal. I've been really excited to talk with you for a while. I really appreciated your astrology. It was probably my favorite. So just really nice to share space with you. Thanks for being here and happy new moon and solar eclipse. Yeah.
Oh, it's the eclipse. All right.
Yeah. Right.
Feeling
yeah.
That.
Oh yeah. We could talk about that a bit if you want. We'll definitely get into some more planet stuff, obviously. But let's talk first about Otherworldly Giants, the Deviation Channel, and your new podcast, which is amazing. We are really enjoying it. We both love the water soundscape. Thanks for that. That's beautiful. You wrote in your show notes for the podcast, I do not recommend you listen to this episode while driving. My work is energetic medicine, and this story is a cleanser for many of you. The story will activate healing, inspiration, creativity, grief, and or memory. Fact. So as a spell weaver and storyteller, tell us about this amazing podcast. What got you to doing it? What was the call? And to quote you, a podcast that weaves multiple genres into one mind-bending, awe-inspiring world full of magic, colors, animals, and ancestors among us. Including some Buffy.
Some or a lot. Yeah. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Okay. What brought me to this work? I mean, it's a really huge question. Otherworldly Giants is the company and storytelling school. And Divination Channel, so it's kind of a three-part, it's a world with three main parts to it, and the Divination Channel is the podcast element of it. And I launched it in March 2022, and it is really my life's work. You know, it's I'm 38 years old. So I guess I launched it when I was 37. And yeah, and I guess I can even say astrologically, it was during a time of what I was going through, this transit called the North Node return, the nodal return. And so the North Node is really about your life's calling. It's about your major sort of karma, almost like your fate and the big work that you're supposed to do in this lifetime. And so it is like that life's calling, soul's calling. And so when you go through that return point, it's really like something is coming into accumulation and fruition around those themes. And so for me to, I almost want to say like my whole life, and many lifetimes, I think was, you know, kind of leading up to the, what this is for me right now. And, I guess too, I'll say like, it's my alchemy. That's how I like to, you know, describe what this work is and why, you know, the part that you mentioned from my description where I talk about weaving multiple genres together. Because it's not following any blueprint. You know, I can't say like, oh, it's a Buffy rewatch podcast. Like it's not or it's like an astrology podcast or it's a storytelling podcast. It's all of those things. And none of those things, it's all kind of weaved together. And it's one of those things that it's hard to explain because there is no blueprint. And the reason why there's no blueprint, it's because it's really my personal alchemy. It's the place in me that is so unique that we all have, right? That is like, nobody else lives in the very particular intersections that you do. And intersections, not even as we commonly think of it in like activist circles, right? It is those things like race, gender, class, etc. But it's also like, it's like Buffy and astrology and past life healing, you know, it's like those things that are like so unique to you. And so that's really where this podcast and this work landed for me. And it was the right timing for me to be able to channel something that I think is cohesive, even though, you know, you have to be in a particular kind of like I like to say frequency, like you have to be kind of on a similar wavelength as me to be able to like, you know, receive it and get it and enjoy it and that kind of thing. So it's not for everybody, but it's my alchemy and it's one of the great loves of my life. So that's where it's coming from.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely alchemy. That's amazing.
Yeah, I love that. I love the weaving together. It's so true. I'm really a fan of while weaving,
yeah,
different types of storytelling. And I love the way you answered that. Thank you.
Yeah, that was really good. Okay, moving on. There is so much collective grief right now. It's actually feeling more like cosmic grief, and that feels connected to your work. Mm-hmm. You wrote that I find great joy in my purpose as a grief worker and my ongoing study for grief in its many forms. That's powerful. And through this work, you provide a guide to working with what you call impossible grief, which is based on learning, song, and storytelling. And perhaps speak to why comedy is so important in that work for you. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. Oh my God. I'm like, when did I say that?
We do deep dives.
So I am like my... I hadn't said this yet, but my really big focus in life is ancestral healing. And so that is, that's just like weave through everything that I do. And it's my focus in my personal life and my professional creative life. It's everything. I know that one of the big sort of things that I'm feeling within my own body and also in the collective is this sort of ancestral stored grief that has just been accumulating for generations and in so many generations and so many like you know, collective cycles, the collective and individuals in the collective did not have a way to release their grief. They didn't have the tools or the strategies or whatever was going on in their societies. They didn't have what they needed. And so there's, so much accumulation of that. And I believe that, you know, that that's one of the gifts and challenges and purposes, I don't know, of the time of our generation, of this time that we're living in, and the coming generations, is to be releasing that stored grief. So a lot of us are grief workers, and a lot of us come into that work not exactly knowing or having an empowered perspective around that, because we weren't taught it. We weren't raised with, like, what is happening when I'm feeling so much grief? So a lot of us, you know, just this feeling of like, I'm too much, there's too much in me to hold. So I think a lot of people are feeling the pain of that, right? But I think, you know, a lot of us are called to be here as grief workers and grief releasers, and called in our lineages to release that stored grief. And all those things that you like, the comedy, the laughter, the transmutation of grief through laughter is just so big. It's, laughter and song are probably the two biggest things for me in terms of what really releases grief. Laughter, song, being in water, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was an amazing answer. Yeah, I love the last thing there about water. And mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I always think that, you know, not having one straight emotion at all time, being able to accept all the other ones of happiness while also dealing with grief. And this is, you know, calling a funeral not a funeral but a celebration of life or something like that, right? Of making it more about not so gloomy but also not ignoring the fact that it's also pretty hard. And
yeah,
I mean, so like that. Yeah,
yeah,
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Embracing, yeah, it. And you know, mm-hmm. on that end, I feel like we often tie grief to emotions like misery, despair, mm-hmm. and there it is, those things sometimes, but
yeah,
that's not the core definition of grief to me.
Yeah.
You know, grief is love. That's how I would define it. Totally. Right. And so in there, yeah, sadness and sometimes despair, but like you said, yeah, also joy, happiness, like all these kinds of celebration. There's so much in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
beautiful, beautiful work. I love that thing about like that you tied it into being said you're too much as a kid. Oh boy, I relate to that. I remember once an aunt told me, like a great aunt, she said, I turned around and said, it's because I have 100 people in me. Like, oh, I'm dealing with stuff. And she said, yes, you're definitely processing a lot of ancestors.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. But then I didn't know what to do with that. And it didn't get supported outside of that one relationship. So I hear you.
That was your aunt?
You said? Yeah. Like a great aunt. Yeah.
Great aunt. Yeah.
Wild, hey?
Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's just like how. As soon, right when I was born, I was aware of death and all of that. Like, as soon as I was born, it was like so many other kids around me were just like right in the moment, all these kind of things. But then I'd be like crying about the fact that we're all gonna die one day.
Are you a Scorpio rising?
No, I'm an Aries rising. Pisces, though.
Pisces, Cancer's moon.
Yeah.
Pisces, okay. I wonder if Pluto is doing something in your birth chart.
Right.
Probably, yeah.
Because Pluto is that, like, I'm aware of death.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think I was also, I think when I was born, I was just, I think my past life didn't full on disappear.
It was part of the transition.
Yeah, probably part of the transition is I probably was born with still, I just died though.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we could nerd out forever. Well, I'm going to get more into the cosmos. You created a theater show project called The Otherworldly Giants Saga, which is a collection of stories where the planets and zodiac signs come to life as humans and ancestors in a parallel universe. And oh, it's so cool. Can you tell us more about it? And I have to ask, do you have a favorite planet in our solar system?
Oh, that's interesting. That's kind of like asking a mother, like, do you have a favorite kid?
I love it. I totally have a favorite planet.
And a favorite kid.
No, no. Yes.
Who's your favorite planet?
Mars.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess for the listeners, I worked as an astrologer for the last 10 years. And so I started reading people's birth charts, but as I went in through, like, I went through a big ancestral and spiritual awakening in the middle of that career, like maybe 2015. And then I started realizing that I actually had the ability to speak directly to the planets, you know, and this is what, in my opinion, like decolonizing astrology is about. It's about recognizing that we're in relationship to the land, in direct relationship to the land and the stars and the planets. They're part of the land that we live in, you know? I could almost say I'm like Mercury is one of my very identified with Mercury as like a Gemini stellium. I'm very identified with Venus because I have like a Venus conjunction Sun, which means like Venus is like very tied into my identity. Neptune is like a very strong planet in my birth chart. But the thing is, like, I don't have a favorite because, and this sort of leads into the plays that I'm writing, because I'm writing stories and plays about the planets, I feel like when you're a writer, you have to love every single character that you're writing in order to do them justice. Or maybe it's the other way around. Like, you fall in love with a character and you want to express them, you want to birth them, you want to write them. And that's kind of what it is for me. Like, I just love them all and for who they are, you know? But yeah, this saga started because I had been doing these, work as an astrologer. And also at the same time, for the last decade, I've been working as a performance artist, you know, in theater, dance, burlesque. And then at some point I think it was 2018, I just got this download of like, oh, the next play that I want to write is a musical starring the outer planets. And I knew that the title was Otherworldly Giants. And so then I started writing the musical, but then when I started doing that, then I was like, oh no, this is much bigger than just one musical. Otherworldly Giants then became this whole company. Like I said, with three, there's like a creation company and a storytelling school and a podcast. And there's multiple stories about every planet. And eventually they'll all lead into the musical. So I think once I get to the musical, which might not be, I don't know, like 5-10 years from now, then I'll have really finished something that my spirit needs to do in this lifetime through this container. And so I have like 5 or 6 plays in my head, all in this container right now. So, you know, that's just that's one of my, let's say, challenges of like who I am as a creator, is like I get so much information and my body is like moves much, much slower. So that's a balance that I have to try and figure out, is like when the stories are coming out and how. So, you know,
I totally understand that. My brain's never in coordination with my body. Yeah, it sounds so cool though. I'm excited to see where your work goes.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, I love it. I agree with you that it is the part of decolonizing astrology a lot. I'm so excited you do the work you do. This is like, I dropped out of high school and studied astrology circa 1983-84. I never became an astrologer. It's not that I'm critical of other astrologers. I'm always like, that's not quite right. But when when I encountered your work through Hari Aluri, I was just like, there it is. So I miss that year. I mean, and I appreciate that you're moving, doing other stuff and we get to get it through your podcasts and other creative work, but I do miss your astrology. I'm just going to say.
I know.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm not the only one who gives you that feedback.
Speaking of astrology, We and probably some of the viewers would like to know, what is Mercury retrograde and why are so many people scared of it?
Oh, you're going to get a different answer from me.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Perfect.
So Mercury retrograde is, so first of all, retrograde is, it means backward movement, or inward movement. And so what actually is happening in the sky, you know, is that the planets speed up and they slow down, speed up and they slow down. And so when a planet slows down from our perspective, it looks like they're moving backwards. And so that's when we say a planet is in retrograde motion. And what that means is the qualities and energies associated with that project, that planet, then start to move inward. So what we say, the energy is blocked. It's not moving forward. There's a lot of, and so Mercury is the planet of communication, technology like phones and, you know, your laptop, and it's short-term travel, like, you know, the subway, the buses in your city, that kind of thing. So that's why, you know, your phones will break down. Transit's always delayed. You never get anywhere on time. And you have a lot of, I think this is why people really get upset with Mercury retrograde, is the relationship kind of kerfuffles that happen because nobody is, when you try and communicate with one another, you're actually just having a conversation in your own brain, and it's hard to actually listen to each other because your thing is going inward. Your communication energy is going inward. So it actually is a really good time to reflect, and revisit things and slow down. And actually people get really upset when they can't get to places on time, or when, you know, the thing is delayed, because we have such this like instant gratification, this thing with instant gratification, right? That we need our tech to work like right away. And it's like, oh my God, a song is going to take like 20 seconds to download. And we're just like, oh my God, like freaking out about it. Right. So, and why I was like, okay, you're going to get my answer, is because, this planet goes retrograde 3 times a year for about 3 weeks at a time. So that's a very large portion of the year. And when you look at the ancestral energetics carried in this planet, we're talking about the communicators and the storytellers. That's who Mercury is. And there's this, the channels, you know, and people who bring gifts and labor into their relationships of communication and doing that kind of, you know, kind of work, the connectors, right? And so when it's like, what happens when we need to take a break? What happens when we need to slow down? We get so much pushback. And this, I'm passionate about this because I'm a very mercurial person, right? And I know what it's been like, you know, as a storyteller or a communicator, when I'm like, hey, I can't actually have this conversation with you right now. I need maybe some time to myself. And the amount of like, oh, what happens? Like the amount of pushback, the amount of resistance, the amount of anger sometimes. The same way that we get angry when our phone isn't working properly and we, you know, start losing our, you know, excuse my French. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's a big and important question, I think, in terms of like, why do people get so upset about the fact that the planet of communication needs to take a break sometimes, regularly?
That was a really good answer. Yeah, no, I love that. And having to take a break. Yep, that's real.
Yeah, it's like our new or different family with our nonverbal days. I'm a Virgo I have 5 planets in Virgo. I really relate to Mercury too. And I'm obsessed with why people get so upset. Like,
why?
Yeah. Take a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I loved your answer.
That was a really good answer.
More Shanga astrology, please. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
I'm going back to something you wrote on the timeline that was maybe a few years ago. How do the ancestors speak to you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Recital, yeah, which is a fabulous piece. Thank you so much. I especially loved when you said, "I trust that a disruption in an individual relationship does not disrupt my inherent belonging in collectivity. I am more available to experience life as delightful, full of surprise, wonder, and mystery." Beautiful. Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. And what is a quantum communicator? Connected. This is a few questions. Sorry. Yeah, I'm just kind of curious about that. And you also use this term core creative, your core creative collaborators. And so I think that it's all connected to ancestors, but I'd like to hear more.
Oh, interesting. It's so funny when you read me back work that I wrote months ago. I was like, oh, interesting. Like, who said that?
I've been there before.
Okay, quantum communicator. I'm glad you asked that because that's a term that I came up with or remembered just this past year. And I guess, you know, I'm always trying to find ways to describe my gifts, my spiritual gifts, and who I am and what I do. And like another word for quantum communicator could be like channeler or oracle. And so it's basically how I describe a quantum communicator or my abilities in that realm is that I have the ability to communicate with anything and everything that has an essence in the universe. And so that is one of my gifts that I come here with. That's why I can speak to planets. That's why I can speak to ancestors who are, on the other side. I can speak to animals. And when I say speak, I mean, I can listen, I can hear them. And then I can translate their messages, you know? So I can talk to rocks and they don't speak in English, but I can hear the translation in English. You know what I mean? So I've kind of went back and forth for many years in terms of how do I describe what I do that feels like it really encompasses what it is for me. And so I then this year I was like, oh, quantum communicator. I like that because the quantum sort of, you know, reflects our quantum universe. And that's what that is. When you say I have this question about the core creative collaborators, do you remember what context I said that in?
And it was like in regards to writing, I think in storytelling, and it's like, it's not just, there's like a, you know, like there's no such thing as the solo artist because we're collaborating even with parts of ourselves. But I was thinking it was more about the ancestors, but maybe I was off, but it was like, Yeah.
You know what? It's interesting because I think when I wrote that on my website, I was talking about calling in the people who I want to work with at most closely through my work with otherworldly giants. So those kind of creative collaborators, you know, and whether it's like a musician or composer or producer, that kind of thing. But you're right, because the most important part of my artistic creative collaborations are my ancestors, who I create with. And this has been really, it's been a, you know, I've been working with ancestors for so long, but, you know, I'm a colonized being like everyone else. And so I have to constantly like remember, relearn, go deeper, remember that, like, oh, my ancestors are with me and I create with them first. You know, I create relationship with my ancestors first, you know? And so it's like, oh, if I want a good partnership, you know, I have to be able to call in the ancestors that I want to be in close partnership with. And then, you know, everything else sort of works out from there. So, you know, when I started releasing the podcast, which was in September, I really got on a roll in terms of like, oh yeah, like this writing circle I have of ancestors that show up for me and create with me when I'm creating these episodes, it's so like I feel them on a deeper level than I have before. I feel how nourishing it is, how generative it is. I feel their personalities. And so that's been like another level of my healing journey, and it makes the writing process so enjoyable. And I think that's important because I think as writers, we're always talking about how lonely it is. And it is a very solitary thing that sometimes you just, you know, you can have writing buddies or whatever, but sometimes you need to just like, it's you and the pen and paper, or the laptop. But when I sit down and I'm like, I can feel energetically that I just like push everything else away, like even all the other ancestors who I normally would hang out with. And it's just like, just me and my writing team. And, you know, then we write together and it's a beautiful experience.
Wow. That's incredible. Thank you for unpacking that for us a bit and opening it up.
Definitely.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Makes me feel good. I love pushing against any ideas of individualism or something. I mean, like,
definitely. It's
beautiful.
Connect with that stuff.
Do you include future ancestors when in your framework? Like when you think ancestors, are you thinking across all time?
Yeah. No, totally. And I mostly, in terms of, there's a lot of ancient ancestors who I connect with who aren't me, although you can make an argument that, you know, everyone we connect with is some version of us, right? But when it comes to the future ancestors, I don't actually connect with a lot of ancestors, at least not consciously, except for myself. I connect with my future self a lot, you know, and so I believe she writes with me, you know, and she helps me channel. And I'm actually helping right now my past self channel, you know? So it's like, when I think about the things that I was writing in 2016, I'm like, when I think about 2016 now, I'm also sending that energy back to myself at that age, right? And so, yeah, I'm always really mindful of the ways that I am supporting myself from many different dimensions and angles. There's a practice that I started this year of writing letters to myself at age like 41 or 42, which is kind of, well, I started it, I guess, at age 37. So it's kind of, me 5 years into the future. Cause I feel like there's something about that 5 year mark where I'm like, you've gone through something that I'm going to take a few years to go through. And you're at a place of like, I got you. I get it. You know, I can hold you. I can send you what you need. Like I have that perspective. And sometimes I connect with like my old woman self, and that's really cool too.
Well, that's amazing. Yep. They count all his ancestors and future and past and all that's all connected. I really like that.
It's a beautiful practice. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, definitely. Aya, before we move on to the usual questions we ask everyone, I wanted to ask, how did you come across Buffy and what has it meant to you? I remember it being big when I was a kid, and I never got into it the way some of my friends did.
Or your brother.
Or my brother. Yeah. My brother was really, he was into it when he was younger and has given me the whole rants about the entire series and the sub series and all the other things. Yeah. So, I was just curious on how that started and.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is actually my answer to your third question about recommendations, but yeah, no, Buffy. It's interesting because my next episode on my podcast that I'm writing right now, it talks about my Buffy origin story. So it actually answers your question in like 40 minutes or something, which I won't do right now. But Buffy, like I was a little younger than Buffy when it aired, but other than that, I was kind of like I watched it live and I was sort of growing up with her, and it raised me. And I was a kid, like I watched a lot of TV, and you know, I'm going to talk, this is one of the things I'm really passionate about, that I'm going to talk about more and more, you know, through Otherworldly Giants, is the concept and reality for me that the characters, fictional characters, are also our ancestors. They're like, they're real, as much as you believe in ancestors or spirit beings or whatever, fictional characters are real like that too. And they are friends, you know, they are our friends. And I think that it's so important to recognize that, especially for kids who grew up like lonely or didn't have access to like, you know, a lot of a social life, or, you know, grew up in social circumstances where they weren't valued or were bullied or whatever, that kind of stuff. So often, like, the fictional characters, like, they show up for us and they are our friends, you know, and they mean a lot to us. And I think, yeah, that's important, because there's this kind of, what's it called? This conception that, like, you're kind of a loser, you know, like, oh, you don't have friends, you're just like sitting around like watching TV or reading books or playing video games or whatever. But it's like, well, these are relationships too, and they matter. And so that's, you know, that's sort of, I recognize now that that's what Buffy was for me. And so I watched it when it was airing, and then I kept watching the reruns. And at this point in my life, I realized that, like, I have a major ancestral calling to do work with Buffy, in terms of, you know, there's been so many Buffy podcasts over the last few years, and so I started listening to them. But then when I was listening to them, I started getting like these huge downloads about, you know, what it would, I was like studying and looking at this text in a way that I hadn't before when I was just watching it. I was seeing themes that are like so relevant to our time, like ancestral healing. I'm like, Buffy is a text about ancestral healing. It's about healing your lineage, you know, and it's about coming into your magic and your power, and the, you know, what happens when you misuse your power, and you know, it's about abolition to me, even if it has a lot of problems in terms of race and racism. But I, even through looking at it, looking at the problems, I'm like, I'm learning so much. And that's why a big part of the season one on my podcast is about looking at Buffy and studying this text from the perspective that I have now. And making that decision to lean so hard into something that for so long was just like, oh my God, I'm so obsessed with Buffy, and it's like this weird thing that Shonga does. But I'm now like, I'm making it a part of my business. I'm making it a part of my life's work. I'm like literally banking on this, you know, in terms of financial, whatever. And my ancestors have guided me to do that. And it's one of those moments where, you know, when I was talking about our alchemy at the beginning, we have to take risks to be our alchemy and show our alchemy in the places that we are called to be and do it. And it's always going to feel scary, because it feels like, who's going to want me like this, right? Whether it's you're doing a podcast or in your relationships, right? Who cares about this the way that I do? But I don't know. I have a slayer's calling, I guess. So I'm leaning in, and I'm at the beginning of that journey, but I trust it.
Yeah. That was amazing. No, that made me so happy. I'm so into fiction and stuff and whatnot. That made me think about how, you know, the connecting to fictional characters, and how there's some, you know, I've been quite recently a bit obsessed with stuff like Norse mythologies and stuff. And some of those mythologies, like a lot of those characters, reading books and stuff, they're pretty much fictional characters, but they were also real at the time as well. Yeah. They were real gods, real, you know, elves and all these kind of things, these two people back then, but they were also fiction and also these kind of things. And I just like, it made me think about that, how so many religions and all those kind of things have the mixture of of realism and fiction, and it's connected. And humans have been storytelling since the very beginning. That's just been our thing of connecting to these, you know, the hero's journey. That's a fictional character, but it's really, really affected so many people in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love, like, in the gen, like, I feel like it was your gen that came up with the kinning.
Kinning a character.
Do you know about this? You kin a character.
My generation's really big on this. So if there's a fictional character, you can also kin real people, yeah, which is just fact kinning. It's called fact kinning. So you can kin an actor, you can kin whatever, but you can also kin characters and kinning, because, you know, kinship, right? And it's literally if there's a character, you don't have to be exactly like them, but sometimes you can. But if you're, like, really, really relating to this character, fictional character, and you have a full connection to them, then you say you kin them. And it means just that then there's so many people online that will see, they'll start seeing half of your personality also coming from, it's like kinning a fictional character brings that character to life through you in a way. It's like, now you're that fictional character almost.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's totally, because I wrote about Christina Yang.
Yeah.
From Grey's Anatomy in my recent thing. And I kept calling her my person.
Yeah.
I think that's
kinning. Yeah.
That's kinning.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kinning that character. Yeah, exactly. No, I have many, many kins. I'm also very obsessed with anime. So there's a lot in that world.
Yeah. It's a fun one.
Yeah.
I love that. Thanks for talking more about Buffy with us
and
for our guests or for our listeners who are guests into the portal. do you want me to do this one? We'll flip.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry,
I was supposed to do the next one. I
just did
one, and then
we were so curious about Buffy.
The Buffy thing. So I wrote my own thing just now.
I also want to say I've listened to a few of the podcasts. You don't have to be up on Buffy to get the whole beauty of this podcast. It's really, really important.
Yeah,
really important.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a Trekkie and a long term. Like, went to the conventions back in the
80s. Oh, nice.
And I don't. Yeah, I always tell. It winds up in my stories too. And I just
like Star Trek and X-Men.
Yeah, I just wrote a whole essay with my other son about Magneto as a potential site for youth liberation and. Youth autonomy.
Yeah, you wrote Magneto like it's a group of people.
Like Magneto is like the ultimate symbol. But anyway, so I relate. But I also, you don't have to have read any of it or watched any of it. So I appreciate that about your work. So we're just going to pivot now a little bit to our kind of the themes of the show. And one of them is this idea of thriving amid and through disasters and hard times, or we call it thrivistance. And we're curious to hear some of the ways you cultivate thriving in your everyday or thrivistance.
Mm-hmm. Thriving. Yeah. You know, like that question for me is one of those things where I'm like, my goal, I don't know if goal is really the right word, but my desire is, for everything in my life to be rooted in thriving, or the road, the timeline of thriving, you know? And, I think that, you know, that's, you can maybe describe the crux of my spiritual practice like that. It's if I'm doing something or making a choice, even if it's a small one, that isn't on that road, that timeline of thriving, I'm not being me, you know. Not being me. And so that's always my way of, you know, in spiritual communities we talk about this concept of alignment, and it's like, when do you feel aligned and when do you click into the alignment that's about thriving, you know. And so the alignment is like, my spirit feels good, my soul, my body, like whatever my circumstances are. And I think, you know, your contextualization around like disasters and big changes and that kind of thing. I think, yeah, it's about how do we find empowerment when we are not in control of so much around us? Like, how do we find thriving in the midst of grief, in the midst of change? Like, those are the big questions, I think, of our generation and of our time. And even more important to root and anchor into the desire, the pursuit, the choice of always wanting to find that timeline, no matter where you are. And that's me, and that's not everyone, you know? And I end up having like big relationship clashes with people who maybe I love and want to be with and resonate in some ways. But if we're not on if we don't share that desire, then our relationship is not going to work out. It's only going to go so far, you know? And I guess, you know, when I was thinking about this question before, you know, I signed on. And I think because I have, it's much like, I don't have an answer of what are some ways I try to thrive, because like I said, I'm trying to do it all the time. But I do want to say that one of the biggest challenges I've had in choosing my thriving is the loss that comes with that. And I think maybe that's something that, I mean, I didn't realize it comes with that. And I think a lot of people maybe don't realize it, because we think of like, I'm going to thrive, I'm going to live my best life and everything's going to be great. It's going to come with loss in my experience, especially, you know, if you're really as, you know, you want it in your life as ferociously as I do, because it comes with so much deconditioning. And that means that relationships that you forged when you were in a place of maybe thriving a little less, and then you found more thriving, those relationships are going to fall apart, or they're going to move on. And there's a lot of loss, and there's a lot of, there's loss that comes with that. And so I think that, you know, I was just like, that's maybe what I'm most proud of in terms of how I choose my thriving, is that I've kept choosing it even when it was really, really difficult. There was something that I was like, there's something else on the other side of the loss and the pain and the grief and the anger that comes with choosing this path. And I've stayed committed to it through some of the most difficult parts of my journey with it, I think. I'm, if I were a betting man, I would say that my most difficult parts of choosing the thriving journey are behind me, knock on wood. There's going to be different challenges ahead of me, but I made it through that. And I'm, proud of myself for that.
Yeah. That was amazing. I totally relate to that.
I'm
very happy.
I'm actually quite emotional, because thank you. Thriving is obviously something I am working on, a collaborative book right now called Thrivetopia.
it's a big thing for you. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just, it is the intersection where a lot of my loss is. So thank you for opening that up. Mm-hmm. You're such a healer. Everywhere you go, you just heal. You're our guest and you're healing everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. Beautiful. Yeah. The timeline of, timeline of thriving.
That's a really good. Yeah. Connecting to that as well.
I'm like,
We are also curious to hear how trust animates your life, work, creative process, whether ancestors or with the planets, with your cat, with people in your life,
stories,
your work.
Yeah. Oh my God. There's a lot of ways that I can answer that question. I will say this, that, because this was just sort of on my mind maybe today and yesterday, I sort of had this like aha moment. For me, trust. Okay, if I'm in the wrong relationship or situation, trust, that's a recipe for how trust erodes, the trust I have for myself and the trust I have in other people. And when I say other people, I mean like, I hate people, like that's where I'll go, you know? And so a lot of times what I have to do is recognize, oh, wait a second. It's not that everything in the world sucks and I can't trust myself. It's just like, I'm not in the right place. This isn't the right environment for me. This isn't the right like community space, or this isn't the right relationship. And when I'm actually in a good quote unquote relationship, but a relationship where we recognize each other, we see each other, we're on the same level, level of maturity or level of whatever it is, there's an ease there where yes, there are still learning curves of trust, but it's, I don't get all angsty about it the way that I do when I'm in the wrong relationship or situation. Wrong for me, not wrong inherently, right? But, you know, so there's that piece of it. And then the other piece of it is like, I realized that there is a part of me that was not fully believing that what I want for my life or relationships or work or whatever it is, not believing that what I want is actually possible. This part of me that knows what I want, but then is like, oh, but I could never have that. Or it doesn't exist. And if it exists, I don't have access to it. Then because I have that subconscious narrative going on in my mind, I end up choosing things that I don't actually want because I'm like, well, then I'll just go with this instead. And then the trust breaks down, right? And so I think right now, the most important thing I'm working on, learning how to trust better, is to trust that thing that I don't have yet that I know that I want, to trust that I can have it and it's already mine and it does exist and it's not out of my grasp. And if I don't have it in my life right now, to be patient and let it come in and not fill its space with something else.
I really loved the first part there of just, because I know so many times it's like, learn to trust yourself and just then you'll learn how to trust all these people in your life that's making your life really hard. And I'm like, I'm trusting myself that I need to not be in these relationships actually. Because it's real, like anytime I get into a friendship, relationship of any kind, where there is actual trust, you know, it's the same thing as learn to love yourself before letting others love you. It's like, that's bullshit.
Smash all the binaries.
Smash all that. Because it's like, no, you're actually, what's going to happen is you're going to find the right people mm-hmm. who will love you and mm-hmm. you'll learn to love yourself through that process. Mm-hmm. And that's your own personal thing. Why are you caring so much about other people's effect on that own thing you have to work on? And yeah, just being able to like not, yeah, being able to leave relationships that people are like, you just learn to trust each other. And I'm like, but it's not working. Yeah, I really liked that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so this is this part where we ask for recommendations. We gave you these three questions ahead of time. So if you have recommendations ready to share with us, that'd be great. And also like connected to the work you do and like even astrology or, yeah. We have a lot of younger
audience,
like teens who listen. So.
My friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uli's people.
Well, yeah, my answer was going to be Buffy, but we already talked about that a lot. I recommend, yeah, if you haven't watched the series, I recommend going in and you have my podcast, although I do give spoilers. So you might want to, if you care about spoilers, you might want to watch the the series before you listen to my podcast. But, you know, another show that I really love is She-Ra, The Princesses of Power. And that's a really fun show because I really love the 80s version. So I really like when I was a kid, I watched He-Man and She-Ra from way back then. And then they did a reboot of it in 2018 or something. And there's like five seasons, but they're short seasons and it's an animated series. And it's so cool the way that there's like a diverse, have you both watched this or no?
I've heard of it. I remember when it blew up and I was online when it blew up and I know a lot of spoilers and a lot about the characters, but I never myself watched it.
I watched the '80s ones with the younger people. Yeah.
Yeah. This one, what I love so much about it is, so there's a really big diversity of how the characters are like drawn and their identities. There's like, you know, there's people of color, there's like queer and trans people, there's, but they live kind of in an alternate universe. And so they don't actually use that kind of language. And I just, I thought it was such a beautiful example of how you center like a queer aesthetic, or not aesthetic isn't even the right word. You center queer experience in storytelling. You center multi-racial storytelling, but you don't call it out in a way where you're like, this is like, we're queer, and like, there's not anything wrong with that, but it's a way of, you know, because I think we have like conversations about like, just make the queer people normal, and it doesn't, that whatever, like that, we don't need to make queer people like they're straight. And so I think a lot of storytellers write queer people into their storytelling, but then they just kind of act like straight people, or they don't get the culture of it. But Shira, I feel like, is an example where you make it the center, but you don't, but you make it normal at the same time. So you make that kind of center the normal. And that is like really cool. And besides that, I just like the storytelling and the character work is incredible. Like I was, especially when we get to season 4 and 5, I was blown away by the level of what, you know, what they're actually saying with the story about like collective healing and honestly, like decolonization and, you know, reclaiming relationship with the land and magic. It's like literally all the things that I want to be writing about. And it was like all here. And it's one of my kin. What do you call it? It's my kin story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah. No, that makes me think, cause I'm really into anime and manga. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about the queer thing and how there is some anime manga stories that's a mixture of anime and manga that, are very like, it's like gay centered. It's like mm-hmm. the characters are saying they're gay and they are in a gay relationship and it's very gay. And a lot of times those ones are really hard for me to watch. Those are the ones that end up not being written the best. Well, then there's like other ones. Some of them I haven't seen, but I know, you know, ones like Sailor Moon, or a lot of my brother's seen a lot of these ones as well. I forget some of the names, but a lot of those ones, they're not, the characters aren't talking about that they're queer or that they're mm-hmm. dating or that they're anything like that. It's just that it is a very, it's as a concept, it's a very queer series, which yeah. I actually like more in that. Like, it's important to talk about actual gay relationships and showcase them and stuff like that. Like, it's to yeah. actually talk about it. It definitely. But as someone who is queer and lives a queer life, I like being able to not see it just played off as, you know, the quick story, and it actually be just about emotion and feel and, you mm-hmm. know, that. In Sailor Moon, like two of the girl characters are definitely in love with each other. They say that they're in love with each other, but they're never like, we're gay. We are gay. We are gay and dating and gay. It's just like beautiful moments of them staring at each other in the eyes and having those beautiful romantic moments, but it's never like straightforward specified. And I've always loved that.
Yeah. I love that. Like, it doesn't have to be like, this is the gay storyline and it's super dramatic and angsty.
This is so many of the gay like actual gay stories that I watch are so angsty. There's always like suicide stories or depression or death. There's always death involved in the gay stories. Well, then just the queer ones end up being, even if there is death, it's like, it's beautiful. And it's mm-hmm. really beautiful and amazing, and yeah. you know, and then like,
yeah,
I'm like, I don't want to actually see real life. When I go to watch fiction, I'm not in the mood to watch my actual experiences as a gay person.
Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything we missed or that you would like to say?
No, I mean, like, thank you for doing this work, and mm-hmm. it's amazing. Like, I love your commitment to joy and thriving. And I love, you know, just what you said off mic, you know, about the purpose behind this podcast to like disrupt who is allowed to have a voice, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So just, yeah, thank you for reaching out. And
yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I love connecting with you. And you also, just for people who go to our website, we have Shanga wrote for the book we put together, Radiant Voices, an incredible piece. And she also, they also, we did a, we called it an audio painting from, I think maybe 10 stories out of the book, and you can go listen to it on our website. Your telling of your piece is so beautiful. Oh my gosh. Thank you for that. And
before we end.
This is important.
Before we end, how can our listeners find you?
And your podcast.
And your podcast.
Yes. My website, shangatagore.com. If you click under the divination channel link, you'll see the podcast there. And so I have like a whole episode breakdown. This is how my creative brain works. Like I have the whole 1 year of episodes planned in terms of like the themes and the titles. I don't know what's going in the titles, but I know the titles. And so it's all there on the website.
Great.
So yeah, you can check it out. Yeah. And Otherworldly Giants on Instagram. Yeah, I'm just figuring out my social media stuff. I'm tired right now, honestly, but I'm there. And I love when there's something to post.
Amazing. Yeah. And we can't recommend the podcast enough and all your writings. Everybody go join it and let us know what you think about the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our show. Grounded Futures is a media production and mentorship collaborative. And this podcast is produced by Carla Bergman, Uliam Joy, Jamie Lee Gonzalez, and Melissa Sharp. And our sound tech is by Chris Bergman.
Resources and transcripts for this episode are in the show notes. If you want to donate some funds or check out our other awesome shows, head over to groundedfutures.com or email us with comments and suggestions at groundedfutures@gmail.com. And please tune in next time to hear more from our incredible guests on how to thrive in the everyday.